Good morning. It's Tuesday, June 18th. I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, why some say FEMA isn't doing enough about extreme heat and wildfires, how so many murders go unsolved in St. Louis, and why therapists love Inside Out, too. But first, let's take a brief look at some other stories in the news. President Biden is making an immigration policy change that could protect about 500,000 people from deportation. The move will effectively give federal protections to some undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens and their children. This comes just weeks after the president made a very different kind of change to immigration policy. He recently clamped down on asylum claims by people at the southern border, a change many Democrats and immigrant advocates were against. Staying with Washington news, two holdout Democrats have signed off on a large arms sale to Israel. The Washington Post reports that this will allow the transfer of billions of dollars in new weapons, including F-15 fighter jets and missiles. The debate over the weapons deal is the latest development to highlight splits in the Democratic Party over U.S. support for Israel's war in Gaza. In Maryland, more than 175,000 people with marijuana convictions are getting a pardon. Governor Wes Moore told CBS that his executive order will give them a clean slate.
We have people who still have cannabis records that are keeping them from gaining access to education and housing and employment.
Policing of marijuana has historically had disproportionate impact on people of color. President Biden previously pardoned thousands of people with prior marijuana convictions. In health news, the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, says that social media feeds need a warning label. He says this would raise awareness about potential risks of social media to young people's mental health. Congress would have to act for this kind of warning label to become a reality. And in sports, things were a little crazy in Boston last night.
It's over. Time to say it again, Boston. Anything's possible. Banner number 18.
The Boston Celtics earned their 18th NBA title with a win over the Dallas Mavericks. The Ringer argues that this Celtics team isn't just the season's best. They're one of the greatest of all time. You can read that story and get more sports coverage in the Apple News app. It's shaping up to be a week of dangerous conditions in the air across the country, from wildfires in California to a heat wave spreading from the Midwest to the Northeast. And there are questions as to whether the federal government is doing enough to help as these threats get more common with climate change. In California, firefighters are taking on a series of wildfires. They're fueled by a combination of heat, strong wind, and low humidity, and further winds could rapidly spread the fires and smoke across the state. Andrew Miller told a local ABC station about cutting a Father's Day lake vacation short to evacuate.
My vision was getting blurry because of all the smoke while I was boating around the boat, and I hardly could see.
Meanwhile, the Midwest and Northeast are bracing for some of the hottest temperatures they've seen in years. Heat alerts were put in place for over a dozen states. Wildfire smoke and extreme heat have a couple of things in common. They're very dangerous to our health. Also, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, doesn't formally recognize them as major disasters, the way it does with hurricanes, earthquakes, and many other dangerous events. The LA Times looks at how healthcare and environmental groups say that needs to change. A new petition from the Center for Biological Diversity and more than 30 other groups calls on FEMA to add extreme heat and wildfire smoke to its regulations. They argue it's necessary to unlock critical funding and aid for disaster relief. That would help local governments both address and guard against these emergencies. In response, FEMA said no change is needed. The agency argues their current definition of a natural catastrophe is broad enough to allow FEMA to mobilize for extreme heat or wildfire smoke. But the petition points out FEMA rejected California's request for a major disaster declaration for the heat wave that killed nearly 400 people 2 years ago. And historically, Attorneys for the Center for Biological Diversity say FEMA has hesitated to provide aid for extreme heat and wildfire smoke. According to the National Weather Service, extreme heat has contributed to more deaths over the last three decades than hurricanes, floods, and tornadoes combined. And smoke from wildfires contributes to nearly 16,000 deaths every year, according to a recent analysis from the National Bureau of Economic Research. PBS spoke to Laura Kate Bender of the American Lung Association about why wildfire smoke is so harmful.
One of the main components of wildfire smoke that's so dangerous is fine particle pollution. These tiny bits of stuff can get deep into your lungs, and if they're small enough, they can even get into your bloodstream, and they cause a host of health harms. There's a bunch of other harmful chemicals in wildfire smoke, too, particularly if it's burning houses, cars, and other things from built structures.
And the smoke can impact people who live hundreds of miles away from a blaze. So to protect your health, she recommends checking your local air quality through the website airnow.gov. But ultimately, Bender told PBS, it'll be up to lawmakers at every level to take action.
We know that climate change is making wildfire risk worse. So continued action on climate change, implementing the policies we have to clean up our cars and our power plants, and doing more will help make this problem less likely to get worse in the future.
In St. Louis, a city with one of the highest murder rates in the country, a significant number of murders remain unsolved. This comes from new reporting from St. Louis Public Radio, APM Reports, and the Marshall Project. It took a lawsuit and 2.5 years of fighting to get the city of St. Louis to turn over records related to how many homicides police solve. The organizations found that of roughly 1,900 homicides committed from 2014 to 2023, more than half, about 1,000 cases, are still open, a painful blow to families who have lost a loved one and are seeking justice.
I don't know if you need to hire somebody else or if you need to hire more detectives or who it is that you need to call, but at the end of the day, a lot of us mothers just want some type of resolution.
This is Erica Jones speaking to St. Louis Public Radio. Her 24-year-old daughter, Whitney, was killed by gun violence 9 years ago. Jones says at first, police seemed to put on a full court press to solve the case, but it went cold, and she rarely hears from police officials now. Same for Calvin Fletcher, whose brother was killed alongside Jones's daughter.
To not have any type of communication, you know, for going on 9 years after probably like a couple months, It's not a way to really do anything. I'm wondering how many, you know, actually homicides have they actually solved.
Reporters for St. Louis Public Radio found significant racial disparities in homicide investigations, too. Over a 10-year period, police solved fewer than half of the cases involving Black murder victims, but cleared 2/3 of cases involving white victims. The reporters found that police struggled to solve cases for a variety of reasons, including careless or incomplete detective work, staffing shortages, and an erosion of community trust in police. Meanwhile, police have said that a lack of information from the public is their main obstacle to solving cases. It's a cycle with broader consequences, says Jessica Myers, the director of the St. Louis Area Violence Prevention Commission.
That can undermine police legitimacy, because community feels like police aren't holding up their end of the bargain by taking the violent perpetrators off the streets.
And some experts argue that failing to solve homicides can lead to more violence, because without an arrest, some people might seek justice on their own. And finally, for those feeling a little anxious about the future of Hollywood, the debut of Inside Out 2 this weekend brought some much-needed joy. It had the strongest opening weekend of any film so far this year. And the movie isn't just doing well at the box office. NPR reports that it's also a hit with therapists because of the emotional vocabulary kids get from it. In the Inside Out films, emotions are the main characters. And in the first film, joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust portrayed the internal world of a girl named Riley. In this sequel, Riley is turning 13, hitting puberty, and we're introduced to new complex emotions: embarrassment, ennui, envy, and a big one, anxiety.
Fear tends to be the emotion that we have that reacts to immediate threats. Anxiety can imagine all of the things that can go wrong and worry about them.
That's Dr. Lisa Damore, one of the psychologists who consulted on both movies. She told NPR the films validate kids' feelings and maybe help the adults around them understand those feelings too. A New Jersey teen named Jose told NPR that's what he hopes for.
Not a lot of people understand teenagers, so this film will be a big help for a lot of parents to deal with kids that are becoming a teenager.
You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next from The Atlantic with a different angle on climate issues. It looks at the debate over climate reparations and what it would mean for the planet's future to hold the biggest polluters accountable. If you're listening in the podcasts app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And we'll be back with the news tomorrow.